I give you a warm welcome, Commissioner Johannes Hahn, responsible for neighborhood policy and enlargement, and also to his delegation. And I start by thanking you for dedicating this time to meeting with us. Now I will introduce the members present. On my left, Dr. Marta Sportelli, Dr. Francesa Middemek, Sir Tony of Tenek, Dr. Michael Falzon, and Dr. Alfred Sand. Your portfolio is of particular interest to Malta since we are situated on the southern border of the EU. Therefore, the southern neighborhood is of great interest and concern to us, and we would kindly like you to explain your policy for this region, especially with a view to contributing to peace, stability, and prosperity from which we all stand to gain. Indeed, the southern neighborhood for us also represents, from where a good part of regular migration flows from Africa to Europe through the Central Mediterranean route. In this regard, there are concerns as to whether migratory flows will shift from eastern routes to the Central Mediterranean in view of the agreement reached recently with Turkey. Your views on this situation are more than welcome, and also in the context of the Eastern Neighborhood Policy. Your portfolio also includes enlargement policy, especially in the Balkans and Eastern Europe. Well, most of the discussion taking place at present is with regard to the Brexit rather than enlargement. And the EU may wish to tell us whether this development influences or is going to influence the EU's enlargement policy in the future. As an introduction, I will stop here and I will invite you to make your remarks. And after that, I will invite our members to make their interventions as well. Commissioner Hahn, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for receiving me in the Parliament. I would also like to introduce my team. I don't know, Marlene, are you belonging to my team or not? mentally to a certain extent. But you know her. But she's sitting more to me, yeah? So, and Colin Scicluna is a member of my cabinet. I think he's the only Maltese, also the Maltese cabinet to be in one of the cabinets. And I really appreciate to have him in my team because he knows everything about the South. So basically most of the questions he should be answered by him. But I think he has briefed me quite well. And Elena Grech, you know very well. I think first I would recall sentence or words of a very wise man, I think, who once has said, geography is destiny. So we cannot choose our neighbors, we cannot choose the situation around us, we have to deal with it. And this is what guides us in our relationship with our neighbors. You have already mentioned, so to say, the keywords: peace, stability, prosperity. This is very obvious. This is also, so to say, the main elements in our revised neighborhood policy review. This applies for the East and the same for the South. Indeed, there are some Eastern neighbors which have, in principle, so to say, a European perspective or European aspiration. European Union membership aspiration, to be precise. This is theoretically also the case in the South, but it's obvious that they can't become member. But it's about how to structure our kind of cooperation. And here we are extremely flexible, depending also on the interests of our neighbors, how intensive this kind of cooperation should be. We have some countries which have expressed their interest to have a very close cooperation. So to say, the most intensive kind of cooperation is an association agreement and a deep and comprehensive free trade agreement. This we have currently with Ukraine, Moldova and Georgia. And we will negotiate such an agreement in the South with Jordan. Tunisia and Morocco provided to take their decisions. I think in Tunisia the launch event took already place. Don't know in Georgia, not yet. But in Georgia we are discussing more and TCFDA light, because the usual format is too complex for them. And in Morocco it depends a little bit on the political situation. There are some tensions nowadays between us and them, but it's caused on their side because they disagree about certain decisions of the European Court of Justice. And they believe that the European Commission can, correct the decision of the Court of Justice by a phone call. The interesting thing in this particular case is it's about the court case where the European Commission, we have lost the case in the first instance, and so we are also victims of the decision, and we have defended the Moroccan position in a certain way. Anyhow, this is this is the more general aspect. Once again, to sum up, it's more about tailor-made solutions. I think it's important to push on the economic development of our relationship, also because we believe that economic development means also an easier opportunity to accept more rule of law standards, or better rule of law standards, because you will only attract foreign investors, in particular SMEs, if they can rely on a functioning judiciary. Therefore, the economic development is so important. If you take the founding idea of the European Union, it was that due to a close economic cooperation, the risk of an armed conflict can be, cut out and can be at least reduced. And if you take the history of the European Union, of Europe, it worked out. And we think the same should apply for our neighbors. And I'm always quoting the Secretary General of the Union for the Mediterranean, who told me that if you take the 24 members of the European, of the 42 members of the Union of the Mediterranean, and you take the trade volume of this 42, 400, 90% is trade between the 28 EU member states, 7 to 8% is trade between the EU and the 14, and only 2 to 3% is trade between the 14. And this includes the Balkan countries, but also Turkey. So you can imagine how poor this trade relation is. And I had just the opportunity to discuss it with the Prime Minister, Foreign Minister, and Minister for European Affairs. I hope that the Maltese presidency will have a focus on the economic development, in particular in the Mediterranean. I would even say with a strong focus on the Maghreb, which I think is extremely important also from your perspective. If I only say a few words about Turkey, honestly, for the time being, it's not possible to have any, the predictability is less and less given after this weekend and all the follow-ups. I mean, in the meantime, I think 35,000 civil servants have been either detained, laid off, moved, whatsoever. Academics are now not allowed to travel abroad. So in rule of law terms, the situation has deteriorated I can't honestly predict what. Yeah, I mean, they have sucked, I think, 20% of all the judges, which has definitely an impact on the quality of the judiciary. They have forced all deans of more than 1,500 faculties to resign. So suspended or sacked more than 15,000 people, teachers in the education sector. So it's a disaster, I have to say. In terms of the migration agreement, we can say so far it stays. Personally, I don't see a particular risk if there is not now a refugee wave from inside Turkey. This nobody can. Also, we cannot predict what's about the further development of the Kurdish conflict. The Kurdish conflict plus the nowadays very tense internal situation might trigger something. I hope it's not the case, but this is where we are. On the eastern neighbors, I think I have, if you have certain interests, there's maybe one example which I would like to highlight. Also, we have currently some problems with them. This is Armenia. But we have negotiated with Armenia a DCFTA and association agreement. It was ready to be signed. And in the very last moment, Moscow was strong enough to force them not to sign. And they joined the Eurasian Union. But later on, they asked us if there could be a contractual arrangement nevertheless with us, and we have looked into it. In the meantime, we have gotten the mandate from the European Council to start negotiations, and I think there have already happened two or three exploratory meetings. So the aim is indeed to find an arrangement with Armenia, which would, so to say, the first example of an agreement of a country which has membership to the Eurasian Union but has also a more or less comprehensive contractual arrangement with us. And I think this could be a good example of a peaceful cooperation, mainly in the area of the economy. Brexit and enlargement, that's why I have said geography is destiny. I think, and one should also distinguish, I think, between the situation on the Western Balkans and on Turkey. There is no indication that anybody would challenge also today and in the future the so to say, the fundamental right of the Western Balkan countries to become at a certain moment, member of the European Union. But more than in the past, we have to understand that it's about the process and less only about negotiations. Because it's not only to transfer, so to say, the acquis communautaire into national legislation, it's also about, so to say, changing certain habits and certain, so to say, cultural behaviors. I mean, they all have, for instance, adequate legal provisions concerning fight against corruption in force, but it's about, so to say, a sustainable track record, how they really implement it, how things are changing. And this applies for many areas, in particular in the area of fundamentals. This is the one side of the coin, and the other side is the economic development. Many of these countries are not really industrialized. They are very the diversification of the economy is rather limited. Some countries are extremely focused on the tourism. They have one or two big industrial complexes from the past, so this has to be changed in order to be much more robust in their economic, so to say, performance. And we should not be, we should not believe that the economic situation of this country is very good if you look only in the so-called fundamentals. If you look at the Maastricht criterion relevant figures, they are all excellent. Yeah? They are far below 60% debt rate. The inflation is also low, but deficit partly. But if you look into the development, and this is my point, for instance, of the last 5 years, in more or less all these countries, the debt rate has been doubled. But as they all have more or less started in the early 90s, they have a very low debt rate. Yeah? So, for instance, the Serbs are now very, very proud for good reasons because they have a surplus in their budget. But for the last 5-6 years, the deficit has been doubled from 16-17% to 35-36%. If you take Kosovo, they had in 2011 5% deficit, now it's 13%. So if you extrapolate this, the situation is certainly worrying, and this has to be addressed, because I don't believe that nowadays our citizens are ready to accept any new member where you feel this is another financial burden. So this can only be a new member state if this is perceived by our citizens as an asset and not as a burden. So the Brexit is, of course, a challenge because we have never seen such a situation. It's also difficult to make any kind of announcements. The only one is that from our point of view, we are of course interested to have very serious, definitely tough negotiations, but definitely with the aim to have afterwards an arrangement which is good for everybody, because UK is an important partner, will be an important partner, and therefore we should have an interest that already the negotiations, the exit negotiations, are conducted, I would say, in as much as possible a friendly spirit, in order to allow us to have afterwards a good arrangement for all sides, but of course with, I believe, within certain limits. Yeah? We cannot renounce on fundamentals, and on the other hand, everything is possible, because that would be a problem for the other member states and for the situation, as we see in many countries, a rising number of populistic parties, and in that respect we have to protect ourselves. Well, I would like to stop if you have, so the questions to particular countries, more than happy.
Well, thank you very much. Before we kickstart interventions from the members of Parliament present here, I would like to ask also some questions about another challenge, because I see three challenges mainly. There is Libya, which is the obvious challenge, which is closest to us. And the situation there is still very, very fragile. There is no stability at all. And there is also now Turkey. You mentioned the situation with Turkey, especially the new agreement regarding the migrations. But there is also the Ukrainian situation and the relationships that the European Union have with Russia. So I would like also to know if there has been any developments, if these relations are at a stalemate after the sanctions imposed and we stopped there. Thank you. I would like, I don't know, any of the members here who would like to make an intervention? Honorable Tony Fenech.
Thank you, Commissioner. First of all, we're really glad to host you here to our Parliament. We also thank you for the good work in a challenging time that obviously your commission is doing also in terms of the neighbourhood policy and enlargement. Clearly, we are facing at the moment at the European level a very difficult situation. where you nudged a bit into it when you said future enlargement, we are looking for countries who can be of asset, when in reality enlargement was always seen to be the European arm for solidarity, and in the way of building a stronger Europe by being more in solidarity with each other. How are you seeing this challenge in terms of also the sentiment within the European population, particularly, unfortunately, blamed on the migration issue, but the real concern of a Europe that is becoming a bit more protectionist to its borders, even on national level, and how this is creating a challenge for a wider neighbourhood policy at a European Union level? I share also the particular concerns also of the issue of Turkey and the way also at the moment the Turkish government is dealing with the aftermath of the attempted coup and the what I see to be excessive retaliatory sort of actions being taken on whoever is a dissenting voice in Turkey, and how this will effectively also influence our relationship with Turkey as an EU, also in view of the agreement which also foresaw a faster pace in terms of negotiations for enlargement with Turkey. How will this change the position or influence the position of the Commission in this sense? In terms of the neighbourhood policy, clearly we are very interested to listen to also what more efforts are being done in the south of Europe. Libya is a particular case in itself because at the moment the situation in Libya is still very unstable. You mentioned Morocco, Tunisia. For us it is of interest also to see a more flexible policy within these countries. I personally am a bit concerned with, you know, the concept within the EU that we only further negotiations on openness if there is more for more. And many times the more the EU asks of these countries are issues which obviously we do not agree with, but which are a bit far for them to attain many times, and therefore this many times brings an element of, I think, mistrust with our neighbours in terms of the intentions of the EU, and therefore impinges on the progress that can be made in our discussions with them to bring them closer. We know that unless we bring more openness in trade, we will not see economic development in these countries, and unless there's economic development, in reality the higher objectives of seeing more democracy, more equality, and all the other fundamental principles the EU believes in not being able to come up, because clearly the first issue would be economic development. On the Brexit issue, I'm interested to hear the Commission's view in terms of how you see this development, also the situation in Scotland, whether the Commission will see a possibility of Scotland joining the EU if Brexit actually takes place. I think I can stop there and leave some comments. Thank you.
Mr. McElfetter.
Take up just one perhaps different facet with the issue of Turkey. Obviously, the recent situation, particularly the doing away with the rule of law, in my opinion, the way things are going, reprisal. There is also talk about whether the so-called coup was an excuse or it was trumped up. I know that may be a sound far-fetched. However, are there any particular thoughts about the security issue? As we know, NATO, Turkey is a NATO ally, and how does you look at that, particularly developments in the Middle East, Syria in particular? Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Francis Amit-Demek.
Well, welcome to this meeting, as has been expressed already. It is, I'll add just maybe a couple of points to what has already been expressed. Clearly, the situation in Libya is of immediate concern to Malta. And one notices that Libya is very much largely out of any structure linked to the neighbourhood policy. So possibly you could give us also your assessment of the situation as it is evolving there in the at the moment. We notice that some recent developments were not exactly very encouraging, because the situation seems to be again very fragile, to put it very mildly. But seeing that within the wider context of how can one engage elements in Libya towards some form of collaboration which is more active, which is more targeted, and at the same time certainly assisting Libyan authorities to the extent they can be always identified in the fight against Daesh, because that is, again, of major concern. When we talk of Libya, and in a sense also when we talk of Egypt, we are in a very much then affected by the alarming increase in the migration. Even the agreement with Turkey, as we know, can of itself, much as it is being successful within its own terms, but can of itself lead to much more migration route in the Mediterranean. Because it is like trying to, so to speak, stop the water flow from one edge, but automatically opening the tap from other sources. So this certainly needs to be factored in. A lot of reference has been made to Turkey. I think it is ironic that it is only recently that, of course, the Commission was opening the benchmarks for negotiations on chapters 23 and 24. With what has happened, including the arrest, detention of members of the judiciary, and then, as you pointed out, extending to academics, extending to civil service, I believe the present target, which probably would be expanded, is of having some eventually 50,000 people in detention, is certainly an aberration of everything we believe in. And the people out there want European Union to react. Does the application process remain there as is? Is it suspended? Does one give a signal in this regard? Now, of course, there is the strategic importance of Turkey, but I think that cannot be a pretext for simply ignoring all that is happening over there. And therefore, again, the position that you are facing, a very delicate position with regard to the question of enlargement in this case, is very relevant. Mentioning enlargement, you may wish to share with us time frames in general to the extent that I identified, because I believe that the present emphasis of the present Commission is not to enlarge within the present coming years, but to do it on a slower basis, as it were, to go more for a policy of consolidating the present membership. Now, that was a policy even before Brexit, but even after that, the policy certainly remains relevant. So how does one tally, in a way, these two schools of thought, the deepening, the consolidation, with eventual enlargement, especially to have more countries within the European fold and avoid in some situations, for instance, Russia taking more of a dominant role with countries such as Serbia? A final thought that I would certainly like to express and close with is, you'll appreciate that many of these challenges we are referring to will also be very much challenges for the Maltese presidency, which is now pretty imminent, and therefore the collaboration between Malta and the Commission over the coming months, it is always highly important, but assumes additional importance, and we need, in a sense, to have our focus tuned with the latest developments and ongoing developments as they are happening and in the light of what we wish to achieve. Thanks.
Thank you. Dr. Frezzant.
Thank you. What I don't find so clear about the Eastern neighborhood policies is their strategic rationale. What kind of targets are we setting there? Is it a question of having a contractual modus vivendi, according to how separately each nation would like to have its arrangements with the EU? Or is it something that is much more global? Is there a vision behind that? Would it be a vision that takes account of free trade ideas, customs union ideas? And how does that relate then to the strategic vision vis-à-vis Russia? Are we on a path that would sort of simulate what happened with Ukraine, in which, you know, one-to-one negotiations with Ukraine suddenly got out of control in terms of how Russia perceived its space being impacted? Do you have a strategic vision as to what the Russian space should be in terms of the Eastern neighborhood context? Because I think that's going to be extremely important, not just in terms of stability in the East, but also in terms of how one comes to an understanding with Russia that is constructive for both sides.
Thank you. Yes, Commissioner Hahn, before I give you the floor, let me point out another issue which I skipped regarding the priority for the 2017 presidency. Obviously, the Mediterranean region will be a priority for our presidency, like it was during the Valletta Summit and also the CHOGM summit that took place in Malta during last November. I give you the floor so that you can reply our queries. Thank you.
Okay. May I start maybe along the order once again our kind of cooperation with our neighbors. We have revised our neighborhood policy, and we have presented this in November last year. The overarching goal is contributing to stability in the neighborhood, and we believe this could be achieved by having a more tailor-made approach, having being focused on few areas of cooperation or fewer areas of cooperation with the individual partner countries, having a real partnership, and based on that, ownership on their side. So it should no longer be that we are quasi imposing something and they have to take it or leave it, but that's why we are discussing with them the priority actions now, which are, so to say, the concrete result. By the way, we are most advanced with Turkey, Egypt on this. I'm really surprised, but it's the case. They're extremely interested on revitalization of our cooperation. Honestly, maybe this is a little bit different to my predecessor, but I'm following a very pragmatic approach. So we cannot overstretch the possibilities of our neighbors. We cannot ignore their historical background, the whole structure. I think we all agree that democracy, the achievements of the Enlightenment are, the reasons for our European success story. And I think we believe not only in terms of, the rights of each individual human being, that this should hopefully apply for everybody, but it's also our concrete experience. But nevertheless, it would be an illusion to believe that you can change societies within 1-2 years or even a generation. So we have to be in a way stubborn on that, and that's why once again we think that the economic development is so important, because in its windfall you can have some first, improvements in terms of fundamentals. Secondly, wherever possible, we invest in civil society organizations and their development and in their enforcement, if you like. We have also increased the budget for this as well in the East than in the South. But once again, we need this specific kind of cooperation. But one of the real outcomes of the consultation process ahead of the revision was this regional aspect in our neighborhood. That's why I come back again on, for instance, the Maghreb, where we would like to see a particular focus during the Maltese presidency to give this a new push, a new momentum, which is in all our interest. There is no need to be jealous if there would be more, inter-regional cooperation there, because it's in our interest if there's more stability. The whole, if we take Libya in particular, I can only reassure you that we have budgetized around 100 million euro to immediately use it as soon as the situation becomes not only clear but stable. But even in the worst moments of this country, we have tried to cooperate with some municipalities, because our understanding was there is a certain element of providing basic needs and keep things running in a way. So we had also invited mayors a couple of months ago in Brussels to see how we can support them in particular on providing basic needs, health treatment, education, things like this. concerning the political situation, probably you are much more aware about the situation. I'm personally not very optimistic for the time being. I was a little bit more optimistic a couple of weeks ago, but it's an up and down. But at least a kind of stabilization seems to be achieved, but maybe I'm wrong. But I would really like to hear your views on that. But be reassured, we are fully, so to say, committed and also focused on this country, because we also understand the geostrategic element or relevance. In that respect, none of you has mentioned it, but I think maybe you have thought about it. We have to look at Algeria, because I think this is a very important country, also for Europe, in a manifold perspective, and it's not really, so to say, at the attention of European countries, and even the knowledge about it is rather poor. Even more, so to say, I would say, the possible threats being which can come from this country if the economic situation is further deteriorating. The whole development of the European Union related to enlargement. When President Juncker made his famous statement and there will be no enlargement, this was certainly not well perceived by a huge majority of people, but it was more or less, so to say, in a nutshell, a technical description about the fact that within this mandate, it's unlikely that any country will not. At least I have started to interpret it like this, in order to mitigate the damage. But I think finally we managed to do this, because it's really about the process and not only about negotiations. And none of the countries will be mature enough and will have not only completed the negotiations, because even if you complete the negotiations, remember, it's 10, 15 years ago, it took between completing negotiations and, so to say, the real accession, 1.5 and 2 years till everybody is ratifying and so on. So therefore, it's in time-wise not realistic. But once again, what we have to do, and I think we were quite successful so far. Only this week on Monday, we could agree on opening this famous chapters 23-24 for Serbia, which is a real breakthrough. Yesterday there was an agreement in, I may say here, Macedonia, which might pave the way to overcome the political crisis, also with elections. I don't know if it's still this year or next year. So this should finish this political crisis, which is there for many years. But if this is then the case, the European family has also to deliver. I'm only saying the name issue, I don't know what happens today in Albania. We have been very close on a breakthrough in terms of a judicial reform. Montenegro, they have, I think this is of particular interest for Malta, they have elections in early autumn. Hopefully they are conducted in a meaningful way, and then we can further proceed with all this opening of chapters, concluding the negotiations on some chapters, and even in Kosovo there is some humble progress, and in Bosnia we can also see with all the up and downs some progress. So in principle things are going on. But if you ask me about the solidarity and the growing thinking about protectionism, I think this is something which affects all of us, maybe with a different intensity. But This week we had the foreign ministers a discussion with Mr. Kerry, and he was was also this kind of TTIP was raised and discussed, and he also referred that the Americans have, in the meantime, and Trump maybe is, so to say, the manifestation of that, a growing problem to explain to people the importance of international relations, contacts, agreements, arrangements for the benefit of individuals. Nowadays everybody believes, and this is, so to say, supported by populistic parties, that the real, so to say, guarantee for the individual future is to have borders, to have walls, to have fences, and to protect people from effects from outside. But this is unrealistic, and I think we have to find ways and means to explain to this. And here I have to say, I count in particular on politicians and public figures in the countries. This is not only the task of European functionaries, not the task of 28 commissioners of 750 MEPs and so on. And so this is, I think, a joint responsibility of all of us to explain to our citizens, to you in your constituency, how important it is to have, so to say, this relationship, and like a very small country like Malta, to be embedded into, so to say, a bigger family. This applies for all of our member states. One of our founding fathers, Henri Spaak, has already said nearly 60 years ago, all European countries are small, but some of them don't know it yet. I have quoted this sentence in France and Germany. So I was, I think, to a certain extent, brave to say this everywhere. But this is important to understand this, and we have to explain it. Probably in Malta this is not a big issue, but in many, many other European countries it's a big issue. And this is creating and causing all these problems we have now witnessed with the migration problem in the Eastern European countries. Because what was discussed to refuse to take migrants, 1,000, 2,000, I mean, we are discussing about ridiculous figures. But it was this general perception. We decide on our own. They refuse to respect, so to say, the Lisbon Treaty, because they have been taking decisions according the rules. Of course, in that particular case with majority, which is, so to say, not the usual way, but it's within the limits of the regulations. And they are not respecting the regulations. Hungary is now provoking a referendum on this issue. And this is, so to say, may I say a disaster, but I think we don't have the time to discuss extensively. I can only say, and in Malta you have a huge experience on so to say, businesses and how to run businesses, etc. I mean, what we have seen in 2004 was a huge enlargement. And I mean, I exclude Malta and Cyprus for obvious reasons. But if you take the eight others and following of that, Bulgaria, Romania, and then Croatia, and afterwards Croatia, this happened with a lot of enthusiasm in an economic booming phase. So nobody cared about, so to say, the need to work on the, so to say, cultural inclusion. 75% of mergers, or if mergers of companies fail, 75% of this is due to the failure to harmonize the different cultures of companies. And to a certain extent, we are facing a similar situation with the Eastern European countries. They have still a different view about Europe. For them, it's important to get financial support. They see NATO as a security dimension for themselves. And other countries in Europe have a very different view on the European Union. So I think we have to learn our lessons and to work on this kind in order to really arrive again on this concept of solidarity. Because solidarity means that you have to support somebody who is in a difficult situation. And everybody of us can be in a difficult situation. So there is no guarantee that always the one are on the safe side and the others have problems. Okay, I have to speed up. I think I have already answered this issue of more for more concerning, so to say, our neighborhood. On Turkey and Ukraine, very briefly, I think we should not be afraid that there is again a kind of rapprochement between Turkey and Russia. If this is helpful, for instance, to come to a resolution on Syria, this should be in our interest. And I think it should be in our interest if there are fewer tensions amongst our neighbors than it is currently the case. Ukraine is definitely a difficult situation. We just received the visit of Prime Minister Groysman in Brussels this week. I have been in Ukraine last week. The situation in the Donbas is becoming worse. The ceasefire is less and less respected. The number of casualties is increasing. There is nearly every day, again, so to say, they are killed soldiers. To a certain extent, the military activities of Russia are different from what they are talking in political terms. So the number of soldiers or fighters in the region has increased. I don't see particular progress on the negotiations. We have to see, and I hope we can avoid that it becomes a protracted conflict. Still, there must be a push on both sides to find an agreement. But nevertheless, we have to deal with the economic recovery or development of Ukraine, because Ukraine is a key strategic country for us in our immediate neighborhood. And I think, of course, we have our eastern neighborhood, but I think we have to deal with each of these countries in a very specific way. There is not one-size-fits-all approach. I think, for instance, we have made some progress with Belarus. It's also in our interest that they are reaching out more to Europe to be more balanced between Russia and us. And once again, everywhere, I believe the economic development should be on the forefront of our activities in order to stabilize the situation. I think Georgia is making a lot of progress in that respect, and I hope the forthcoming elections will prove that. There will be the first elections in Georgia in its history which are not, so to say, the outcome of unrest and so on. It's simply that after 4 or 5 years, whatever the term in office is, there are now elections necessary, and this is another positive progress. Very briefly on Scotland, honestly, I can't predict anything what will happen. What is clear is that Scotland has to apply. There is no automatic transfer of the there can't be an automatic transfer of the current UK membership to Scotland. Theoretically, but this is, I think, far away and very premature, it wouldn't be a big deal to negotiate this. I think it's more a political problem because, in particular, Spain will not be really willing to accept this. On migration, here, honestly, what concerns Turkey, I think we should be, I'm cautious, but we should be less afraid that there might be another wave triggered by Erdogan if he dislike comments from Europe. Because, indeed, they have 2.7 million Syrian refugees. I have been several times in East Anatolia. All these people either want to stay in Turkey or want to move back. There is no appetite to come to Europe. Also because the culture is the same. There's only a difference in the language. And many of them are already rooted in Turkey because their children have been born there. Many of them are already in the country for 5-6 years. 85% of them are living, so to say, in the country and not in camps. What the local, regional Turkish authority have asked us, and we will do this, or have already started, is to provide language courses also for adults, not only for children, to provide microcredit financing in order to give them the opportunity to found their own companies or to further develop their companies. So this is what is the situation in Turkey. Concerning Africa, it was here in Valletta during the summit that we have established this African Trust Fund. Only yesterday we had a very, comprehensive meeting, internal meeting, how to follow up on this, because it's indeed about, addressing the root causes and trying to reduce, the pressure to migrate. And this is only possible if we invest, and I think we should understand it as a kind of investment in these countries. Once again, maybe a last reference to the eastern neighbors. I mean, we have 6 eastern neighbors, and 5 of them have territorial conflicts with Russia. And in that respect, I think in the interest of all of us, we have to have a reflected way to cooperate with them, to give them space to develop their potentials. We have now with 3 of them at DCFTA, it starts to work out in the way that the export is increasing to Europe. I was in Georgia only last week. They told me that agricultural products within 1.5 years has been more than doubled to the European Union, of course from a very low level, but this indicates the potentials, as all these countries from the former Soviet Union have still a very, undiversified economic situation. Many of them are very agricultural. Many of them are still, suffering from the Soviet heritage in the way that, in the big Soviet Union, it was not a problem that Georgia was only producing wine and apples, that Moldova was producing apples and wine and others producing tomatoes and so on. But today, if they are, on their own, this is not sustainable. So they have to diversify. They have to increase their value chain. And this is something which is supported by us. So, in principle, if I take everything, I think we could stabilize the situation in some countries, in some parts of our neighborhood. But of course, this is a permanent process, never concluded. And personally, I expect from the presidency, from the Maltese presidency, a very strong focus on the southern neighborhood. Malta is the only southern or Mediterranean country during this period which is chairing the Union, and this should be used. And I think in particular this regional cooperation should be a particular focus of your presidency, and we really count on your support to use this opportunity to so to say, to create more attention of these countries without having necessary a conflict there.
Well, I would like to thank you, Commissioner, for your visit, and also would like to congratulate you for your very good work. And at the same time, I would kindly ask you that for you to always keep our region on your list of priorities. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.